Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
With the New York Times in one hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
America is as divided as it has been in 150 years.
Politics is symptomatic of the culture.
They don't have a personal relationship with Christ.
We've been sacramentalized, but not evangelized.
Why should Washington listen to us when our own house is in disarray?
The church's greatest riches are her people.
Share the contagious joy of being a friend of Christ.
Story after story after story of people who have had inexplicable healings.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
That's beautifully said, Al.
Thanks for your voice for liberty.
It's like a homecoming each time on your program.
Clear to me that you've thought these things through at a deep level.
Let's build the church, and then we'll bless the nations.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. Thank you for joining me today. Let me lead off with a news tidbit that I take special pleasure in. It looks as though Mother Angelica, the founder of EWTN Global Catholic Radio and Television, is going to be inducted into the Alabama Women's Hall of Fame coming up on March 5th. Mother and Justice Janie L. Shores, the first female on the Alabama Supreme Court, are going to be inducted into the Alabama Women's Hall of Fame coming up on March 5th. And I just, knowing Mother's story, I laugh because I can, back in when she was born, 1923, and grew up as Rita Rizzo in Cleveland, Ohio, poor, a very unstable and unedifying home, ill health, I don't think she could have imagined how fruitful her life would have been. And even the world is looking upon her achievements and giving them honor. So I love it. Again, coming up March 5th, we'll probably do something more extensive on this in the near future. But Mother Angelica being inducted into the Alabama Women's Hall of Fame coming up next month. Let me tell you what we're doing today. We're going to be talking about God's existence with Dr. Gerard Verschuren. He's penned a book called A Catholic Scientist Proves God Exists. Important because many people think that it's worthless to rationally discuss whether God exists or not. Catholics don't. Catholics think it is important to present theistic arguments. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk with two women who were captive in Iran for 8-9 months facing execution because they distributed the New Testament. Marian Rostampour and Marzia Amirzadeh will be with me next hour, and we'll also be talking about the upcoming 40 Days for Life. But first, the news.
Thanks, Al. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Friday, February 21st. It's the Feast of St. Peter Damian. Today's news is brought to you by the Ave Maria Family of Funds and AveMariaFunds.com. A week-long reduction in violence begins tomorrow with the Taliban in Afghanistan as the first steps towards a peace deal with the U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says the two sides hope to sign the deal on February 29th as long as the week-long reduction in violence holds. About 1,000 Democratic voters in Nevada are reportedly being notified that their early ballots have been tossed out because of errors. The Nevada Independent says that's nearly 3% of the 36,000 votes cast in the first 3 days of early voting. Another 39,000 ballots have yet to be counted. The death toll from the coronavirus outbreaks continues to rise, and now the illness has claimed more than 2,200 lives around the world, the vast majority in mainland China. NBC's Miguel Almaguer is following the story.
Amid concern of a global pandemic, the coronavirus has now reached at least 30 countries and territories with more than 75,000 reported cases. But China claims the spread of the virus may be slowing.
The majority of confirmed cases are in the epicenter of the outbreak in China's Hubei province. A top White House advisor says the U.S. will host a 5G conference in about a month. National Economic Council Director Larry Kudlow said President Trump will attend. Some top tech companies will be invited, including Samsung, Nokia, and Ericsson. Kudlow said the White House meeting will look for ways to counter China's telecommunication firm, Huawei. And EWTN founder's Mother Angelica will be inducted into the Alabama Women's Hall of Fame, along with Justice Janie Shores, the first female member of the Alabama Supreme Court. The induction ceremony will take place on March 5th at Judson College in Marion, Alabama. I'm Steve Clark, Ave Maria Radio News.
afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. The Catholic Church teaches that we can prove the existence of God, that there are, in fact, arguments that are valid that lead to the conclusion that God exists, and that human reason in some way participates in God's knowledge itself. I'd like to know, and I think you'd like to know too, that in a day of science, in which science is the privileged way of knowing the world, what do these theistic arguments that the Catholic Church has looked to, we often talk of St. Thomas's five ways, for instance, in a world of science, what do these arguments really say? How relevant are they? Well, with me right now to work on this question is Dr. Gerard Verschuren. He's a human geneticist who earned a doctorate in the philosophy of science. He has studied and worked at universities in Europe and the United States. And he is the author of an outstanding book, A Catholic Scientist Proves God Exists. Dr. Verschuren, good to have you with me. Thanks.
It's my pleasure to be with you.
Why don't we, let's start really just asking, science itself is the privileged way that we are looking at knowledge in this era. Can science prove God's existence?
The answer will probably baffle many people. We expect all our answers from science nowadays, because
right.
Science has an impressive track record, and we think anything that is reliable must come from science.
Right.
But the amazing part is that science may be able to do a lot, but it cannot do certain things. And one of the things science cannot do is prove something. I know, we get bombarded all the time that science proved this and science proved that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at it from a deeper level, there is no real proof in science. We can confirm things by experiments. But at the same time, someone else can come up with a better hypothesis, and then everyone says, oh, the previous hypothesis was not good enough,
right.
So we have to revise everything.
So it's always tentative.
It's always tentative, provisional, and it keeps changing and changing and changing. If you look at the history of science, it keeps changing all the time.
Yeah.
Even great people like Albert Einstein thought for a long time that our universe was eternal. And then someone, a priest, for instance.
That's true, yes.
the famous Lefebvre, he came up with the idea that there is a beginning of the universe and that it was not eternal. So we have to revise things. In genetics, we fought for a long time, two decades, that we had 48 chromosomes and we have only 46. So what happened to those other two? They disappeared.
Right, right.
Science can never really prove, and besides, it cannot even prove its own assumptions. It assumes that there is a world outside of us. How can you prove that?
Right.
We could all be dreaming, a nightmare, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Or how can it prove that there is order in this world? It's not possible. So if we want to prove that God exists, we cannot go to science. Sorry. Disappointing, maybe, but we cannot prove, and we cannot even disprove God's existence in science.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Sure. It certainly does. I mean, science is, again, is great for certain things, but it can't do everything.
Correct.
You use the example here of a metal detector. A metal detector is a wonderful thing if you're trying to detect metals. But if you're trying to detect melons, it's not so good. It doesn't work.
No. It's not so good, and we can never say there are no melons because the detector did not detect it.
Yeah. Let me just step back a bit here. People make the mistake that everything we know is somehow attributed to science, and that gets confused with the idea that Christians claim that we can find a God in what we know, rather than in what we don't know. So scientists have very good idea of the things we know, but they can't claim control or providence over everything we know. Are we in danger? Are Christians sometimes in danger of, as science increases its range of knowledge, are Christians sometimes in danger of running to those places that science hasn't touched yet and saying, oh, God must be there. If we didn't find him here, then he must be there. This kind of the God of the gaps problem.
Yeah, that is a serious problem. For the gaps in our scientific knowledge, they get very easily filled. When time progresses, we discover that this is possible and that is possible, and the science couldn't prove it, could not say much about it, and then all of a sudden we can say something about it.
Right.
So we shouldn't locate God in the gaps of our science. God is not a material entity. That's why science cannot touch God. And I'm saying a non-material entity is not a gap in science because it has nothing to do with science.
That's right, yeah.
We cannot test God in a laboratory. For then we put God below us, not above us. God cannot be trapped by any kind of ingenious experiment. Do neutrinos exist? Probably.
Yeah.
Most scientists will say, oh, yes, they do. It has not been proven yet, but let's say they exist. But God is not a hypothesis. Hypothesis is something you hold on for a while until you find a better one or whatever. That is not what God is about. We can never close a search for God with the conclusion that there is no God. That's impossible. It's like saying there are no black swans until we find one. But again, a swan is a material entity. So maybe we can take a picture of one and then say, this is my proof. Is it a real proof? Not really. Maybe it was a painted swan. We don't know. So we have to do much more. Fortunately, if you want to prove that God exists, you cannot go to science, you cannot even go to math, but you can go to something else we all have, whether we are atheists or Christians or agnostics or Catholics or Protestants or a Hinduist. There is one thing we all have in common, and that is our rationality.
Mm-hmm.
We can reason, we can use logic, and through that, and that is the main thing of my book, a Catholic scientist proves that God exists. He doesn't prove it as a scientist, but as a person that has the power of reason. And everyone has reason, and through reason we can prove that God exists.
Mm.
And no one can attack those proofs.
Yes.
In science, we can attack them all the time. We say, I have a better experiment.
And that's one of the strengths of science.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you say that right. Yeah, that's a good point.
Can we say that the question of God is certainly a factual question, but it's not a scientific question?
Yes, you can definitely say that. For there are facts in science, and there are facts in religion, there are facts in theology.
Mm-hmm.
If God exists, if we say yes, that's a fact.
Yes.
And if God does not exist, then my facts were wrong. Then I had the wrong fact. It's not a scientific fact, but it is a fact of reality.
Mm-hmm.
Science deals with reality, but that is the material part of reality. Religion deals with the non-material parts of reality. And those are still facts.
Right.
If I say that God is triune, three persons in one,
yes,
that is a fact.
Right.
Or it's not a fact, and then I was wrong. Or my facts were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The facts were not really facts. This is a little heavy stuff now.
Yes. Very good. Let's go then to some of those proofs of God's existence. They don't come from science, because science deals only with material entities that can be quantified. What do you find to be the most compelling of the proofs, the theistic proofs.
Yeah, in my book, I mentioned five of them. There are actually more than five, but I think they are all pretty strong and definitely very convincing. That's what I try to show in my book. If you follow logic and if you follow the premises that we start from, you have to go with them. I think that one of the best ones is what they call the argument from motion.
Okay.
I don't like that word motion because that sounds like it's a physical concept.
Right. And
St. Thomas Aquinas didn't mean that. He was not talking about balls on a pool table that hit each other, and then there is a cue ball that starts the whole thing. So I don't like the word motion. But let's say it's the argument from causes. Everything has a cause. Every scientist will agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
If some scientist tells you, hey, I found something that doesn't have a cause, then they will attack you from all over the place.
Right,
you have to come up with a cause. And that's what the most important argument starts with. It says everything that came into existence must have a cause. It was caused by something. And then we say, for instance, I think I used in the book radioactivity, if there is a radioactive process, a decay, there must be a cause mm-hmm. behind it. And then, of course, scientists will say, what is the cause of that? And what is the cause of that?
Right.
And what is the cause of that? Like little kids always keep asking, why is that? Why is that? Why mm-hmm. is that? And they never stop asking. So if you do that, you will never get out of that endless loop of asking and asking and asking. So there must be something that chain of causes, that all the steps to a radioactive decay or whatever example you use, or every cause of your existence, your parents, and the parents had parents, and the parents had parents. But where do we end? Yeah, you could end with the first human being. But still, then the question is, why, the why question, what is the cause that human beings can generate human beings?
Right.
What is the cause of that series of causes?
Mm-hmm. Dr. Verschuren, we've got to take a break. We'll come back and pick it up from there. My guest, Dr. Gerard Verschuren, a Catholic scientist, proves God exists.
In Making a Holy Lent, 40 Meditations to Prepare You for the Church's Holiest Season, EWTN host Father William Casey offers a compelling retreat designed to help you answer God's call to be people of faith, prayer, and devotion. Grow closer to God this season with Making a Holy Lent, now available at EWTNRC.com or call us at 1-800-854-6316.
We recently filed a Friend of the Court brief in the U.S. Supreme Court in June Medical Services versus G, a case in which the justices will decide on the constitutionality of a Louisiana law requiring abortionists to have local hospital admitting privileges. We filed the brief on behalf of Priests for Life and Rachel's Vineyard, which provides post-abortion healing for the many people harmed by abortion. As set forth in our brief, Louisiana has a paramount right to protect the health and safety of its citizens, and this includes enacting regulations to raise the standard and quality of care for women seeking abortions. In support of Louisiana's right to enact such common sense regulations, we included in our brief the compelling testimonies of victims of abortion from states across the country, including Louisiana, persons who have been harmed in a profound way by the deadly procedure. These testimonies reveal that such regulations are not only valid, they are necessary. Supporters of abortion often claim that they want it to be safe, legal, and rare. The truth is, the abortion industry just wants to keep the deadly procedure legal. They could care less about safety, and they certainly don't want abortion or their profits from it to be rare. This is an important case because it's the first one in which both Justices Gorsuch and Kavanaugh will be deciding. We can hope that the court will acknowledge that it has overstepped its bounds in many ways on this issue, and that it will begin to introduce more sanity into the case law. I'm Robert Buse, co-founder and senior counsel for the American Freedom Law Center, bringing you this Faith and Freedom Minute. You can learn more about the American Freedom Law Center by visiting our website and liking us on Facebook.
If you believe in the power of prayer, Ave Maria Radio invites you to look at their website to submit a prayer request at avemariaradio.net.
Your prayer requests are shared with hundreds at the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, the Servants of God's Love, the Monastery of the Blessed Sacrament Cloistered Nuns, the Family of Faith Apostolate, and the staff of Ave Maria Radio. Just go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the Community tab to submit your prayer request today.
Hello, this is Steve Ray, and who doesn't like a Mediterranean cruise? But this cruise is even more special because we're hitting 10 biblical sites. We're going to study the life of St. Paul and his ministry and where he visited, but also Mary and St. John. Got two great priests, Father Chris Alar from the Marians and Father James Conlon from St. Francis in Ann Arbor. We hope you can join us.
To learn more about your Ave Maria radio trip, go to AveMariaRadio.net and find the pilgrimage link.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 15 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide. 5% of your monthly plan price goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
Did you miss the open enrollment deadline for 2020? Options are still available. In fact, Pro-Life Catholic Healthcare is just a click away. CMF Curo offers an affordable, community-based, pro-life Catholic healthcare option. If you still need healthcare this year, now is the time to join CMF Curo. Visit MyCatholicHealthcare.com for affordable healthcare options for Catholic singles and families. That's MyCatholicHealthcare.com.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. With me, Dr. Gerard Verscheren, author most recently of A Catholic Scientist Proves God Exists. And before the break, we were talking about the argument from cause, or the argument from motion, argument from causes, and working back to the idea of a first cause. And you were saying, you were using the image of parents and taking it back. You know, this child has a parent that which was a child, and that child had a parent which was once a child, and you just go back. So why don't we pick it up from there?
Okay. Even if you have a long chain, it might be endless. It could have a beginning and an end. It doesn't really matter. But no matter what choice you choose, that chain of causes is hanging in the air.
Mm-hmm.
It has no foundation to rest on.
Right.
It needs a foundation to rest on. It needs a beam to hang from. And that beam, or that foundation, is what Thomas Aquinas calls the first cause.
Mm-hmm.
The first cause is not at the beginning of the sequence. It is above that sequence. It is the beam from which that whole series of causes hangs from. Mm-hmm. Or, to use another image, it's the foundation for it to rest on. And without that foundation, everything collapses. Without that beam that it hangs from,
mm-hmm.
the thing would fall down or it would float in the air.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it's not an explanation. The scientific explanation can never do the final step. It has to step outside the chain of causes and say, why is there something rather than nothing?
Yes.
That's the famous question that has haunted us for centuries. And some people say, oh, okay, everything that came into existence can generate itself or produce itself. It's the cause of itself. That is a logical error. It would have to exist before it came into existence.
Right, right. Yes,
yeah, so, I mean, absurd.
You often hear people say, well, if you're claiming that everything has a cause, then of course you have to ask the question, is God, you know, does God have a cause? But what you're saying is, no, it's not that everything has a cause, but everything that comes into existence has a cause.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You hit it, the nail right on the head. It's everything that came into existence. It's amazing how some scientists, like, for instance, the famous Hawking, who started a lot of stuff, he said, oh, that's that's very simple. The universe generated itself. And so, and if you come up with God, then I'm going to say, why doesn't God have a cause? So in other words, you did not end the infinite regress of causes. You keep going and going, and God, what is the cause of God?
Right.
That's he didn't understand, or he didn't want to understand, that only something that comes into existence must have a cause.
Right.
And God
right.
is existence itself.
Right.
So he is uncaused. He has not a cause, but he makes other causes outside himself possible.
Yes.
And that's you and me. You can be as a father or as a child, there is a cause for you, and you create causes. That's what God does for us.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a pretty strong argument here. Everything that comes into existence must have a cause. Everyone accepts that. Even a scientist
right.
will, or not,
right.
not even, but they must accept that. Everything that comes into existence must have a cause. So it's a self-evident starting point. If you deny that, then the whole thing collapses.
Right.
But you cannot deny it. It's self-evident. And then you have to avoid infinite regress, or going on infinitely to the past or to the future or whatever, for then there is no foundation for the chain to rest on. There is nothing to hang from. So there must be a first cause, and that first cause is a necessary being which does not need a cause for itself. So that's where the buck stops, as
right.
Peter Kreeft always says.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
where the buck stops.
Let's move the discussion to the argument from design, then. This is an argument that people often tie to St. Paul in Romans chapter 1, where we find that since the creation of the world, God's existence has been known through the things he has made. The argument of design does begin with empirical observations, right? You're looking at the world, and the world appears to have been designed.
In the traditional way, yes.
Yes.
It does. Yep.
So in that sense, is this a more attractive argument to scientists?
No, I don't agree with that. I know that has been claimed many times.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, in the interpretation you gave it, and most people give it that interpretation, it is an argument like science uses arguments, and they can't prove anything. They can make things more likely, or they can confirm things.
Mm-hmm.
But in my book, I explain that we have to find another starting point. And the starting point for the argument from design is the fact that there is design in this world, which is something we assume. By the way, it's not something we observe. I know some people say we can observe design. Then we are back in science. That's fine. I have no problem with that. Science can point to God. You can say, yeah, if you think it through deeper, there is definitely a reason why there is a God. Yeah, yeah. But it cannot prove it. And I try to prove it with my arguments. This is the only argument of the whole series that cannot prove anything if you take it that way. So I made it let's call it a deductive argument.
Okay.
That you cannot avoid the consequences and the conclusions if you start it that way. So the design is something that has to be accepted ahead of time. So every being that came into existence has a design, like glycoses have like effects. That is basically a design. They were designed in a certain way that the cause has certain
right.
effects.
Right.
And if that design cannot explain its own existence, it cannot. Nothing can explain its own existence, but then it existed before it came into existence. I repeat that again. So then there must be a first designer. And the first designer must be a necessary being and does not need to be designed itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a premise that's no one can really reject. And if you accept that premise, sorry, then you are bound to accept the conclusion that there is a first designer. But then I have changed it into an argument like all the other
right,
arguments.
I was just going to say, yeah.
Yeah.
So if the designer, so in this case, then, you're really arguing that the designer doesn't need to be designed.
Correct.
Because he's the origin and the source of all design.
Yeah.
Yeah. So which
and if you go the way you gave it the first interpretation, then it's an argument that you can easily attack. And I think I avoid that by using the argument as I just described it. Every contingent being is designed. Like causes have like effects.
Yep.
That's we didn't make those effects.
Right.
The causes didn't make those effects. A designer did.
Yeah.
The designer of this world, who created the laws of nature, those are basically designed things. A law of nature is a design feature.
Very good.
There is much more to the discussion, but I don't think we should burden each other with that.
Sure. No, I. This is very good. And by the way, I want to let listeners know that the book goes on to talk about the attributes of God as well, why God is all-present, all-knowing, all-good, why God is triune, why God is incarnate. And before we pick up anything there, though, I wanted to ask you, given that once it seems to me that once a person grasps what you're saying, these arguments, and they understand and they get past this idea of infinite regress, they're really firmly established arguments, and they provide a great deal of confidence. Why do you think it is that we have such a difficult time bringing people to see the force of these arguments?
Yeah, that is a very good point, because those arguments are so convincing that you wonder why didn't it convince everyone.
Right.
And I think there are several reasons. One of them is that they don't really want to spend their time on those arguments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you are not interested in sources, then you are not going to spend any time on a discussion.
Yeah.
Some people are not interested in God. Yeah. And what is even worse, they don't like the picture of the world with God in the picture.
Right.
So they are not willing to do that. As Thomas Aquinas always said, if arguments don't convince you, it's very often that the will doesn't accept that.
Mm-hmm.
And Blaise Pascal said the will sometimes prevents us from seeing what we should see and what we are forced to see. And where does that resistance to the willingness comes from? I always say it comes from the enemy of God, which is Satan, devil. So the devil is doing a good job. The devil knows that God exists, but he doesn't want that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, in the USSR, in the Soviet Republic at that time, they kept claiming all the time God does not exist, and they kept saying that and saying that and saying that. I said, why spend all the time to fight something that you don't want to fight because you think it doesn't exist? If God doesn't exist, you don't have to fight
it. Right.
Just let God rest in peace.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. So it's something inside of us that keeps resenting that. And some people, there are some theists nowadays, they were for a long time atheists. And finally, they changed.
Yeah.
I would say by the grace of God.
Yes.
I think one of the best examples is Jean-Paul Sartre. He was a very strong atheist French philosopher. And a few weeks before his death, he all of a sudden had a conversion.
Yes, this is shocking. I've heard about this.
A shocking conversion. And he had an interview with one of his former friends who always admired him, and he said, I know there is a purpose to my life, and I know there is someone who made me for a purpose. I thought, oh, did I read that right? Did I hear that right?
Right.
From Jean-Paul Sartre?
Right.
So he had finally given up his unwillingness to accept the arguments for God. And I think that's the best example that I wish everyone would go through if they are atheist.
Yes, yes.
But please, before it's too late.
Well, I wanted to point out, too, because we're just about out of time, that I love this book, and one of the reasons I love it is that throughout you have a discussion going on. So you've got an interlocutor, a questioner, that's with you through the book. So you're actually involved. This book is actually an extended, very sharp conversation, and I think that makes it even easier to read. So I wanted to thank you very much for that feature of the book as well. Dr. Versharen, thank you.
Thank you for mentioning that part. That's a very important part.
It is. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
We'll talk again.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
This program is brought to you in part by the nonprofit St. Paul Street Evangelization. St. John Paul II stated that for the disciple of Christ, evangelization is a duty, an obligation of love, and the Catechism of the Catholic Church states that evangelization is necessary for salvation. So we know we're called, but how do we do it? St. Paul Street Evangelization can help. To learn more, contact us at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray here. My newest book, Raising Upright Kids in an Upside Down World, help you stand strong against a culture no longer on your side to identify all of the forces trying to misshape your child. To help you stand strong against those forces, to resist them, to recognize them so you can raise the kind of kid you wish to raise. You can get the new book at AveMariaRadio.net. That is AveMariaRadio.net.
Bishop Robert Barron on the priesthood.
I've been a priest for 31 years. It's a call to a total gift to Christ. It's a total gift of one's life to be conformed to Christ. You know, and that's why I felt it when I was a young guy and I was kind of getting into religion and understanding it more deeply intellectually. It just began to hit me with a great clarity that if this is true, if God is real and God is a supreme good, well, why wouldn't I give my whole self to God? Why would I get distracted by anything else, you know? Now, again, I'm not saying that should be true for every single person on the planet. That's the way it hit me when I was a young guy, was I want to give as much as I can my whole self to Christ. So there's something heroic about that, where you do eschew a lot of things. You say no to a lot of things so you can say massively yes to Christ and to his demand. I think that's a heroic quality of it.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Who is responsible for the death of Jesus? The Catholic Catechism emphatically states that neither the Jews of Jesus' time nor the Jews of our time should be considered rejected or accursed as a consequence of the Lord's passion. Not all the Jews in the religious hierarchy were opposed to him. Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea were two prominent men who were secret disciples. The Acts of the Apostles notes that many priests were obedient to the faith and some belonged to the party of the Pharisees. St. James reported to St. Paul that many thousands believed in the Lord and were also zealous for the law. The religious authorities were not in unanimity as to what to do with Jesus. The Pharisees threatened excommunication to his followers. The Sanhedrin, having declared him a blasphemer but without power to execute, turned him over to the Romans as a political anarchist. The Catechism cautions we must leave judgment as to the participants in Jesus' trial to God alone. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. Ash Wednesday will mark the start of Lent. It also is the start of the annual 40 Days for Life, and the Ann Arbor chapter of 40 Days for Life is kicking off the event with a Jericho march at Planned Parenthood this Sunday. Now, I want to stress that around the nation, there are lots of opportunities to participate in 40 Days for Life. I'm focusing in on Ann Arbor. That's where we broadcast from. And I wanted, again, local people to know, too, that this is an important event coming up. Again, 40 Days for Life formally kicks off on Ash Wednesday, but there is a Jericho March kicking off the event this Sunday at Planned Parenthood. With me right now to talk about it, Sandy Weathers, who is the Ann Arbor campaign director for 40 Days for Life, and I have to say, my son, James Cresta, an attorney with a fine law firm in Southfield, Michigan. And, well, James, after all these years, you finally managed to finagle to get in on the program.
You know, I can die a happy man. I have finally been on Dad's radio show. So to all my siblings out there, I win.
Well, great to have the two of you with me. Sandy, let me lead off with you. Tell me a little bit about the, for people who are unfamiliar with the 40 Days for Life campaign, what is it?
It is a campaign of prayer and fasting, community outreach, and holding a 40-day-long prayer vigil outside an abortion facility. What we're doing, which is unique in Ann Arbor, is that we are having a Jericho March, which is going to take place for 7 consecutive Sundays. And this is inspired by the book of Joshua, chapter 7, where the Israelites marched around the city of Jericho for 7 consecutive days. We're going to do it for 7 consecutive Sundays. And to kick off our event this Sunday, of course, we're going to have James, your son, as our keynote speaker at our kickoff rally in lap 1 of our Jericho March. And our other speakers include Father Bill from St. Thomas in Ann Arbor, and also Reverend Christopher Toma from our Savior Evangelical Lutheran Church in Heartland is going to be joining us and speaking and leading the march as well with Father Ashball.
Okay.
So we have a great lineup of speakers, and we're very excited about this event.
So, James, let me ask you, what are you going to be speaking on when you are there this Sunday?
We're going to be talking about the fact that the pro-life movement really is the last great civil rights issue, and it is really the defining issue of our generation. You know, I think the greatest threat to civil rights is complacency.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the pro-life movement traces its beginning all the way back to the 60s. It's been a long fight.
Right.
And unfortunately, Roe v. Wade set it back even farther. So we need to fight that complacency. And I think there's so many good things happening right now. It's time for people to wake up. And if you're pro-life, and if you've been pro-life maybe your whole life or for a long time, and that complacency has started to settle in, it's time to shake it off, because things are happening in America right now.
Yeah.
And this is a critical time. People need to show up. People need to make their voices heard. So we're going to be talking about that.
Okay. That's a great point, because it has been a long time, and many of us who have been involved in the battle over these decades now sometimes grow a little tired and, as you say, a little complacent. In fact, I remember, I think your first year in law school, you went to start pro-life chapter at law school at Wayne State University and actually had some difficulty getting involvement.
Absolutely, yeah. When I was a law student at Wayne State University Law School in Detroit, I noticed they had a reproductive rights organization, which is an ironic name considering the only thing they're worried about is stopping reproduction. And so I started a Law Students for Life group, and it was very difficult to get it off the ground. I didn't run into any sort of institutional roadblocks from the school. I don't think they're too worried about us. I was told by another student, well, this organization will start with you and it'll die with you.
Yeah.
And he was wrong. It carried on after I left there. But I do think that beyond the complacency, the other big hurdle is pro-abortion advocates have done a terribly effective job of silencing pro-life people.
How so?
If you are a if you're a pro-life professional, they've forced you to think twice before you speak up, and it's wrong. It's unconstitutional. It's un-American. And so people need to speak up. People need to show up for events like this, the kickoff this Sunday.
Sandy, it's clear that you also know that this is not just an issue, but there's a spiritual battle going on here as well. And that's why you've got this Jericho March starting in imitation of the Hebrews surrounding the city of Jericho and marching around it. Talk to us a little bit about the spiritual dimension of this.
Oh, my goodness, Al. This is our expression of spiritual warfare. When we go out to Planned Parenthood, you can sense from the escorts that are out there that there's a spiritual warfare going on. Mm-hmm. They put up their silly signs, you know, to not stop for the protesters. But many different things happen to our people as they're, you know, they're trying to get out there and fight the good fight. And good things happen in that spiritual warfare. Like one of our volunteers one day was being very hesitant about getting out there, and she had on her calendar PPP, Pray at Planned Parenthood, and she didn't want to go, but she went anyway. And when she was heading over to Planned Parenthood, the license plate in front of her said PPP. And she knew that was a sign from God that she was supposed to be out at Planned Parenthood praying that day. And she felt very, very blessed by it. So so we can see signs if we look for them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we can feel that hostility as well.
Yeah. I'm talking with Sandy Weathers, who heads up the Ann Arbor 40 Days for Life campaign, and my son, my third child, James Cresta, an attorney with a law firm in Southfield, Michigan. He'll be one of the speakers at the kickoff rally this Sunday. And again, I want to stress, while 40 Days for Life formally begins on Wednesday, Ash Wednesday, this Sunday, though, is their real kickoff in Ann Arbor, marching around Planned Parenthood, which will be done for seven successive Sundays, right, Sandy?
Yes, seven consecutive Sundays, yes.
Mm-hmm. Also speaking, I want to mention again Father Bill Ashbaugh, St. Thomas the Apostle Catholic Church in Ann Arbor, and Reverend Christopher Toma, who's with Our Savior Evangelical Lutheran Church in Heartland, Michigan. James, as a professional who has been, you know, pretty forward in letting people know your commitments to life, what do you fear most as a professional?
Losing my career.
Yeah.
To be totally honest, do I think that will happen? No, I don't. But at the same time, you see that sort of thing happen around the country,
right,
with some frightening level of frequency.
Mm-hmm.
You see it a lot on college campuses, mostly with professors.
Mm-hmm.
Who have a platform to speak on these issues. And I think it's I'm not so much worried about losing friends or acquaintances. Those are people who know me, and they know what I'm all about. I'm not so much worried about that. But I do think that, you know, Planned Parenthood has encouraged the abortion side of this debate to intimidate and to threaten and to have you erased.
Mm-hmm.
If you speak up. And so that's my biggest fear. But you know what? It's not working. They're losing and they're scared.
Right.
The abortion rate in America is at the lowest rate it's been since 1973, when Roe v. Wade was passed, ruled into law. And just in the last year, you've had 58 pieces of pro-life legislation passed in the United States.
Wow.
46 states saw pro-life legislation introduced, and a number of states passed state amendments to their constitution outright banning abortion in the event that Roe v. Wade is overturned.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we talked about complacency a little bit ago. Now's not the time to be complacent,
right,
because there's so many good things happening, and the pro-abortion side, they're scared.
Yeah.
They're scared. They think because they're losing.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting to hear the tension in the voices of pro-life advocates. Planned Parenthood dismissed a new president in the last year because she was interested in focusing on broader issues of women's health and wanted to kind of make abortion less important to Planned Parenthood's purpose. They finally decided she was in the wrong place and dismissed her. So they can't even afford, even Planned Parenthood can't afford to begin talking more broadly about women's health. They've got to keep abortion at the center of what they do, largely because I think they fear, without being on the offensive like that, that the pro-life movement in the United States will continue to win minds and hearts. Sandy, in your experience over the years, do you think that you're seeing people soften on this issue? Do you see more people willing to say, I'm pro-life, even if they aren't all the way down the road to wanting to overturn Roe v. Wade? Do you see people still thinking that abortion is not a good thing?
Oh, absolutely, Al. Everything is indicating that people are starting to wake up and understand what is happening to our children in abortion and what is happening to the moms and the dads as well in abortions. In Ann Arbor, we have some great news. Before 40 Days for Life began in the year 2006, there were 1,113 Washtenaw County moms that presented themselves for abortions. And now that figure in 2018, the state of Michigan put these figures out. Mm-hmm. That figure for 2018 was 785.
Wow.
So hearts are changing. That's a 30% drop in Washtenaw County, which is one of the most liberal places in the United States. 30% drop, that's incredible.
It is.
There are so many good pro-life activities, people jumping into pro-life activities. We're seeing more and more and more volunteers all the time because of Unplanned and David DeLeiden's work. And, of course, you know, WDEO is getting the word out. Arbor Woman, Family Life Services, Protect mm-hmm. Life Michigan.
Right.
U of M Students for Life, all the parish work that is going on in Washtenaw County and beyond is incredible. And what Guadalupe Workers and Citizens for Pro-Life Society, the people that are joining them,
yep.
it's incredible the partnership that's happening in Washtenaw County.
Yeah. Sandy, we're out of time, but thank you so much. Go to 40daysforlife.com. James, I'll talk to you later.
Did you know you were kicking in your mommy's tummy before you were born?
We were?
Yep. I just learned at school that babies move and kick before they're even born.
No wonder we're so good at soccer.
Hello, I'm Marian Kuharski, the director of Pro-Life Across America. We know that conversations about right to life have become very heated, even angry. We stay away from that political fray. We're non-political and totally educational. We don't scream or scold. Instead, we help people working through unplanned pregnancies know their options. We're here to help both mom and the baby. And we rely on people like you to help with our mission. Please call 1-800-366-7773. Check us out on Facebook, YouTube, or at ProLifeAcrossAmerica.org.
A baby's heart is beating 18 days from conception.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams, and this is the logic of Catholicism. Solanus Casey said, appreciation is as necessary for social order and harmony as are the laws of gravity for the physical world. St. John writes, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was made flesh and lived among us. John's referring, of course, to Jesus as the Word, which in Greek is logos, and that's where we get the concept of order, reason, and logic. People with Jesus could see, hear, and touch him. With their senses, they eventually reasoned that Jesus was the incarnation of God, who beforehand they had only known by faith. Thus, the incarnation unites faith and reason. Today, tell someone you appreciate Jesus. because he revealed how faith and reason together are, well, logical. And that's the logic of Catholicism. Explore more at AveMariaRadio.net. Under resources, look for me, Dr. Stan Williams.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. Thanks for being with me this hour. Remember, 40 Days for Life kicks off formally on Ash Wednesday. But if you're in Ann Arbor, Michigan, we've got an event coming up on Sunday. It's their kickoff. The Ann Arbor chapter, 40 Days for Life, is going to kick off the event with a Jericho March at Planned Parenthood this Sunday. And my son James and Sandy Weathers exhorted us to participate in that this coming Sunday. And again, I would urge those of you who have local expressions of 40 Days for Life, it's important to get out there and let people see us on the street. Now, coming up next hour, we're going to listen to an amazing story from two women who were held captive in Iran, in where they had a 14-day detention period, and then the rest of their 9 months there was in Evin prison, one of the darkest prisons with a wicked human rights abuse record. They were there for what? Distributing Bibles, New Testaments. Maryam Rostampour and Marzia Amerizadeh will be my guests, and we'll be learning a lot about what life is like in Iran right now. And the thing that is so frustrating about this is that Iran, as a nation state, has signed on to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. You know, that goes along with being a member of the United Nations. The Constitution is supposed to protect religious freedom. We're going to find out that's not the case next hour.
This hour of Cresta in the Afternoon is co-produced by Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
With the New York Times in one hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
America is as divided as it has been in 150 years.
Politics is symptomatic of the culture.
They don't have a personal relationship with Christ.
We've been sacramentalized, but not evangelized.
Why should Washington listen to us when our own house is in disarray?
The church's greatest riches are her people.
Share the contagious joy of being a friend of Christ.
Story after story after story of people who have had inexplicable healings.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
That's beautifully said, Al.
Thanks for your voice for liberty.
It's like a homecoming each time on your program.
Clear to me that you've thought these things through at a deep level.
Let's build the church, and then we'll bless the nations. Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta, and we have a story coming up this hour. Two women who came to know Christ in the Islamic Republic of Iran. We'll listen to their stories of their conversion to the Christian faith, and we'll also find out why they were imprisoned, arrested, imprisoned, and tortured for their faith. They spent time in Evin prison, which is actually quite notorious. International Christian Concern has been monitoring that prison. And 60% of the Christians who are arrested in Iran serve time in Evin prison. And there's an ongoing string of reports that they've been denied medical care. They are subject to intense interrogations and inhumane living conditions. And more generally, when you move beyond the Christians to political opponents of the regime, you learn about more brutal treatments, including assault, electric shock, medical abuse. We're going to talk with Maryam Rostampour and Marzia Amirzadeh about their experience. They've chronicled it in a wonderful volume called Captive in Iran. And they'll share with, I don't know how many details they'll share with us about what they went through during the imprisonment. But I wanted you to know, even before we start the conversation, that where they were imprisoned is considered one of the worst prisons in the world right now. And, You know, all of this takes place in a country that in its constitution, people are promised religious freedom, and Christians are supposed to be a protected minority in Iran. It's amazing. But stay with me. That's what we're doing this hour. Right now, though, the headlines.
Thanks, Hal. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Friday, February 21st. It's the Feast of St. Peter Damian. Today's news is brought to you by the Ave Maria Family of Funds at AveMariaFunds.com. It appears as though jurors have reached a partial verdict in the Harvey Weinstein rape and predatory sexual assault trial in New York. NBC's James Flippin explains.
Former Hollywood heavyweight Harvey Weinstein was indicted on 5 counts. Per reports, jurors have reached a consensus on 3 of those counts. They're continuing to deliberate and trying to reach a unanimous verdict. Earlier in the day, we'd heard the panel was no longer going to be requesting any reading back of testimony. The charges Weinstein faces could put him behind bars for the rest of his life, including predatory sexual assault and rape. If jurors believe he raped actress Annabella Sciorra in the early 90s, they can convict on the predatory charge, the most serious one.
Voters will be heading to their precinct in Nevada tomorrow for the state's caucus. Among Democrats, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren is hoping to rebound after a strong debate performance this week. Warren had disappointing finishes in New Hampshire and in the Iowa caucuses, along with former Vice President Joe Biden. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders is expected to do well after his recent victory in the New Hampshire primary. The U.S. women's soccer team is asking for nearly $67 million in back pay and punitive charges. Lawyers for the team and the U.S. Soccer Federation filed motions yesterday. USSF attorneys asked for the U.S. District Court in California to dismiss the charges. The federation argues that the men's and women's teams are represented by separate unions and negotiated separate agreements. The players counter by saying the Equal Pay Act says they cannot give up their right to equal pay through union negotiations. And EWTN founder's mother, Angelica, will be inducted to the Alabama Women's Hall of Fame. The induction ceremony will take place on March 5th at Judson College in Marion, Alabama. I'm Steve Clark, Ave Maria Radio News.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. Maryam Rostenpour and Marzia Amirzadeh knew they were putting their lives on the line. Islamic law in Iran forbids the sharing of their Christian beliefs. But in 3 years, they had covertly put New Testaments into the hands of 20,000 of their countrymen and started 2 secret house churches. They were caught in 2009, arrested, imprisoned, sentenced to death. And they share their story in a book called Captive in Iran. It's a true story of, what they went through and really the triumph of God's Spirit. Maryam, Marzia, good to have you with me.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you so much.
I will let you, when I ask the question, since there are 2 here, I will let you decide who answers it, okay? And I guess the first question is, how did you become believers in Jesus?
I became Christian many years ago, as a young adult. I was around 17 when I first heard about Christianity. I can say for all my life, I was searching for the truth, and I was doing research. I was trying to find the truth and find a way to communicate with God, but the only thing that I had access to was Islamic rules, and from very young age at the schools, we had to follow those Islamic rules. We didn't have access to any other religion or any other books of other religions.
What was your prayer life like as a Muslim?
As a Muslim, we had to pray namaz. As you know, namaz is in Arabic. Our language in Iran is Farsi. But we were forced to pray namaz in Arabic, and even in the schools.
Okay.
In public gatherings, we had to stand in lines, pray namaz with other students in Arabic. And that was the only way that we could communicate with God. Since, you know, we didn't know Arabic, we didn't know what we were saying. That's why it was, it wasn't like communicating with God. That was one of the problems I had.
Yeah.
I couldn't communicate with God, and I wanted to find a way to talk to him. That's why after doing many researches and, you know, after years of trying to follow Islamic rules, but you know, not receiving anything from following those rules, I decided to just leave alone all those religious rules. and not practice any religion. I just, I will talk to God in my own language, Farsi, for hours sometimes.
Wow.
Before going to bed. I was just, I would look up into the sky and just talk to God, the God that I didn't know, in my own language, Farsi, and I would ask him to reveal the truth to me. That's why I believed, you know, because I had this hunger and thirst in my heart to find the truth. He revealed the truth about himself to me. And one day when I was home alone, my sister came home. She had a little booklet in her hand. The title of that booklet was His Name is Wonderful. That was part of Book of Luke. And, somebody in the street gave that little booklet to my sister. And it was after reading that booklet that I experienced the presence of God. We don't have much time to share all the details, but when I was reading that book, I could feel the presence of God. Jesus spoke to my heart through those words in that booklet, and that's how I gave my heart to Jesus.
Very good. And Marzia, how about you?
I had the same challenges like Mariam, because I grew up in Iran, which is an Islamic country. And as Mariam shared, we don't have access to other religious books, only Islamic books. And, as Mariam mentioned, from our childhood in school, they forced us to follow the Islamic rules, pray namaz in school. And that's why I had a lot of questions about Islam, why I have to speak to my God in Arabic instead of my native language, Farsi. Mm-hmm. Why should I cover myself when I pray to my God? And why, I have to bend in front of a God who created me, who loved me. So I had all these questions from in a very young age, and I would keep asking those questions at school. But my theology professors always would tell me that you should stop asking questions. You should just follow these Islamic rules if you want to have relationship with God. And that's why I was so desperate, and I really wanted to know my God, to have a relationship with him. That's why I started practicing the Islamic rules, reading Quran, because I was thinking maybe by doing these, by following these Islamic rules, maybe I can, have a relationship with God, to get to know him. But after a while, I was so exhausted, because as Mariam mentioned, it's just, practicing the Islamic rules. It's not a kind of relationship with God.
Right.
And the first time God spoke to me through one of my dreams, in that dream I was praying to the sky, and suddenly a white horse came down and started speaking to me, and it asked to sit on his back. When I obeyed, the horse took me to a city where people coming out of the mosque, they were practicing Islamic rules, which is very famous in Iran. And at the beginning, they couldn't see me or the horse, but suddenly God revealed their real faces to me. And all of them turned to savage animals. As soon as I saw their real faces, they could see my face, and they could see me on top of the horse. And they attacked me. They tried to kill me and take me off from that horse. So the horse started running to save me from those people. And I remember as I held its neck, I felt its love pouring it into me with a power and purity I had never experienced in my entire life. It was the love of God that I experienced through that horse. And he saved me from those people in that dream. And after that dream, I was so shocked, because I tasted the love of that, the love of God in my dream, and also God revealed the real face of Islam to me. It was after that dream that I just put aside, my religious duties, and I just decided to, to have a conversation, to relationship like a father and a child with my with God, just talking to him with my own language. And I started this relationship until one of my friends talked to me for the first time about Jesus, and she gave me a Bible. I was so curious, because before that I didn't have any information about Christianity.
Right.
In Islam, they teach us that Jesus is just the son of is a prophet, and that's why I was so curious, because I heard that Jesus is the Son of God for the first time. And I started reading Bible, but still I was so confused. I couldn't find out what is the truth. I just prayed, and I was so desperate, and I asked God, please show me the truth. If Jesus is the truth, you must guide me to the right path and save me from being misguided. I don't know what is the truth in this world. And after, you know, that prayer, many miracles happened to my life. I had the experience of healing, and I, you know, those miracles, and I had other dreams that started, you know, the beginning of believing in Jesus. But my main experience with Jesus was that when I was praying, I was alone at home. I was praying to God, and suddenly I received the flames of Holy Spirit, and I began to pray in tongues and worshiping God. It was an amazing experience. It was that day that I saw Jesus for a few seconds in front of me. He was in a white clothes. Beside him was there was a big throne, which was covering with shining gold and jewels. And at that time, I felt that God removed the curtain before my eyes, and I could see not only Jesus, but I could see the whole truth about him.
Wow.
And I didn't have any doubts at that time. Mm-hmm. And God revealed him, Jesus to me. And from that day on, I gave my heart to Jesus. I repent of from all my sins, and I became sure that Jesus is the only truth in this world.
I've talked to a number of former Muslims who have come to know Jesus, and dreams often play an important role in their conversion. Is that actually true?
Yeah, in Iran, you know, it's not just me. I have a lot of dreams. God usually talks to me through my dreams. I have a notebook full of my dreams that, you know, it wasn't just the first time that I had the dream of that white horse. The white horse came to my dream, a few other times and talked to me. And also I have other dreams that God speaks to me. And we have this experience when we were evangelizing Iranian people in Iran. We could see that other people had dreams about Jesus. And even before we talked to them about Jesus, they would share with us that, you know, before that, I had a dream about Jesus, and we were searching to find the truth, who is Jesus. And it was very amazing that, you know, God speaking to people through their dreams. Even in Iran, the government tried to, you know, stop everything. People do not have access to Bible, but God has other ways to mm-hmm. talk to people. Mm-hmm. Nobody can stop God. That's why I believe, you know, many Iranians have a lot of dreams.
Interesting.
If I may, I would...
yes, so please go ahead, Miriam.
Share one story. Yeah. You know, you mentioned in the introduction that for years, Marty and I were distributing Bibles and evangelizing Iranian people. And now you're talking about dreams and how God revealed himself through dreams to people, not just in Iran, but in the whole Middle Eastern countries. I remember one day, you know, I had a few New Testaments in my purse. Whenever we wanted to go for shopping or just going out, we had a few New Testaments in case we talked to some people mm-hmm. and wanted to give them a Bible. And I remember I went to a bookstore once, and I was just going to buy some books for myself. And suddenly I mentioned a young man came into bookstore, and he went to the manager, who was a prejudiced Muslim, and asked for a Bible. And the manager became angry, and he said, no, we don't sell Bible in bookstores, and you cannot find it anywhere in Iran. And that young man was so desperate, and I waited for the manager to go downstairs, and I went to him, and I handed the New Testament to him. But I was curious, and I asked him, may I ask why you were looking for a Bible? And he said, last night I had a dream, and in my dream, I saw Jesus.
Wow.
He told me that tomorrow you should go to a bookstore and buy a Bible, and then go to a mountain. I want to speak to you. And he already had his backpack. As soon as I gave him that Bible, he left, and he thanked me, and he left. But we had stories like this, how, you know, before even we went to people and talked to them about Jesus, he had dreams about Jesus.
Yes, yes.
And it wasn't new to them.
Beautiful. The Holy Spirit goes ahead of us, it oftentimes preparing the hearts of people we talk to. Mariam, Marzia, hold it there. We have to take a break and come back. Talking with Mariam Rustenpour and Marzia Amirzadeh, they were putting their lives on the line. Islamic laws in Iran forbade them from sharing the gospel with people. It took them 3 years, but they covertly put the New Testament into the hands of 20,000. We're talking about how they were arrested, imprisoned, and sentenced to death.
In Making a Holy Lent, 40 Meditations to Prepare You for the Church's Holiest Season, EWTN host Father William Casey offers a compelling retreat designed to help you answer God's call to be people of faith, prayer, and devotion. Grow closer to God this season with Making a Holy Lent, now available at EWTNRC.com or call us at 1-800-854-6316.
We recently filed a Friend of the Court brief in the U.S. Supreme Court in June Medical Services versus G, a case in which the justices will decide on the constitutionality of a Louisiana law requiring abortionists to have local hospital admitting privileges. We filed the brief on behalf of Priests for Life and Rachel's Vineyard, which provides post-abortion healing for the many people harmed by abortion. As set forth in our brief, Louisiana has a paramount right to protect the health and safety of its citizens, and this includes enacting regulations to raise the standard and quality of care for women seeking abortions. In support of Louisiana's right to enact such common sense regulations, we included in our brief the compelling testimonies of victims of abortion from states across the country, including Louisiana, persons who have been harmed in a profound way by the deadly procedure. These testimonies reveal that such regulations are not only valid, they are necessary. Supporters of abortion often claim that they want it to be safe, legal, and rare. The truth is, the abortion industry just wants to keep the deadly procedure legal. They could care less about safety, and they certainly don't want abortion or their profits from it to be rare. This is an important case because it's the first one in which both Justices Gorsuch and Kavanaugh will be deciding. We can hope that the court will acknowledge that it has overstepped its bounds in many ways on this issue, and that it will begin to introduce more sanity into the case law. I'm Robert Buse, co-founder and senior counsel for the American Freedom Law Center, bringing you this Faith and Freedom Minute. You can learn more about the American Freedom Law Center by visiting our website and liking us on Facebook.
I might have gone to church, you know, at Christmas time, gradually quit going. It's not as scary as I thought it was. It's a much more warm and open place, and God really is about love. It's not about the rules and the things that I remember as a young child. It really is about the love that God has for each one of us that's so deep and wonderful.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church for any reason, visit CatholicsComeHome.org.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray here. My newest book, Raising Upright Kids in an Upside Down World, help you stand strong against a culture no longer on your side to identify all of the forces trying to misshape your child, to help you stand strong against those forces, to resist them, to recognize them so you can raise the kind of kid you wish to raise. You can get the new book at AveMariaRadio.net. That is AveMariaRadio.net.
Did you miss the open enrollment deadline for 2020? Options are still available. In fact, pro-life Catholic healthcare is just a click away. CMF Curo offers an affordable, community-based, pro-life Catholic healthcare option. If you still need healthcare this year, now is the time to join CMF Curo. Visit MyCatholicHealthcare.com for affordable healthcare options for Catholic singles and families. That's MyCatholicHealthcare.com.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization, Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 80% of the referral check to Ave Maria Radio and Students for Life. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. Maryam Rustampour and Marzia Amirzadeh knew they were putting their lives on the line. We're talking about their experience in Iran, where they became believers in Jesus Christ and then began sharing the gospel. We're taking a look at how the public authorities in Iran responded. How did the two of you meet?
It was in 2005 that we met each other in Turkey for the first time, because we both separately were interested to know more about Christianity. We had separate experience with Jesus. We shared a little about it, and we both were in love with Jesus, and we wanted to know more about Christianity. And since in Iran, it wasn't possible to continue learning more about Christianity, we had to travel to other countries. We went to Turkey, and we started, you know, our courses together. It was theology and leadership courses, mm-hmm. and we learned about a lot about Christianity. And after that, we decided to return to Iran, even though we knew that how much it's dangerous to return to the country. But we wanted to, you know, share this message with our people. That's mm-hmm. why after finishing the courses, we returned to Iran. And we started praying how we can serve our people. And God gave us a vision that we need to distribute Bibles in Tehran, in Iran, because people do not have access to Bible. And I was reading Bible, God speak to me, and he showed me that Iran is like a big land, that there is no seed in this land. He told me, first you need to plant some seeds, then I will grow all these seeds by Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. So we decided to distribute Bibles in Iran. We talked to our pastor who was in London, and we asked him to provide a New Testament for us to distribute in Tehran. And we asked for thousands of New Testaments because we knew that we should cover, you know, each part of Tehran. We started from Tehran because it was the capital, and we bought a map, and we started from the north of Tehran to the south every night. We would carry about 140 New Testaments in our backpack, and we would visit one area in Tehran and distributed those New Testaments. And after almost 3 years, we could distribute 20,000 New Testaments in different parts of Tehran.
Wow.
And beside that, we had two house churches. We had a house church for young people. We would invite them and teach them about Christianity. And also we had a house church for prostitutes. And so every day, beside all these things, every day, whenever we would go out, eating at restaurants, doing our chores, we had some New Testaments in our backpack. And sometimes we would talk to people about, you know, our faith, about Christianity, and we would give them a Bible as a gift. And because of all these activities, in 2009, the government arrested us.
How did they become aware of you?
You know, we were so active. We were distributing Bibles, as Marjorie mentioned, and we also had house churches, and we were so open about our faith.
Okay.
I remember we would talk to anyone, strangers in the streets, and invite them to our house churches. And in Iran, it's, you know, it's hard to tell who is working with the government and who is not. And, you know, as I mentioned, we were so open about this.
Right.
And people would come to our apartment for our meetings and for our, you know, worship sessions. And we didn't know anything about our neighbors, whether or not they were watching us or reporting about us. Mm-hmm. But when we were arrested, we were heard, we were told by our first interrogator that they were watching us for a few months because they said that they were aware of some of our activities, and they saw us handing a Bible to someone in a restaurant. But when they arrested us, they didn't know anything about our mission of distributing 20,000 Bibles, mm-hmm. because if they had known, they would have executed us immediately.
Wow. What is the criminal penalty for evangelizing there?
Actually, the one day arrested us, they sent us to a detention for 14 days.
Okay.
And we were kept there. It was a horrible place. We didn't have access to food. It was a very dirty, dark place. We had to cover ourselves with blankets full of urine. And they treated us so inhumane. And after 14 days of being in that detention, they transferred us to Evin prison with charges of apostasy, blasphemy, anti-government, and promoting Christianity in Iran.
And was that a death sentence?
For apostasy, yeah, because when you were sentenced to apostasy based on Sharia law, yes, you have to be killed.
Well, what were the conditions like in the prison?
Yeah, Marjorie mentioned about the detention. You know, we were in different detention centers. For 14 days, we were in a detention center called Vozaro, and then we were transferred to Evin prison. Again, in Evin prison, there was another section called 209 for interrogations, and they usually transfer political prisoners for tortures to that section. We also had the experience of being in that section for 40 days.
but most of the time we were in the public ward of Evin Prison. But I can talk about, you know, the condition in the first detention center. As Marzi mentioned briefly, it was horrible. For the first few days, we didn't have anything to eat or drink. We had to sleep on freezing cold floor. There was no carpet, and we could only use some wet blankets, the strongest smelling of urine. We couldn't even brush our teeth. We couldn't take a shower. We couldn't. We had no access to anything, I can say, in that detention center. There were other women in that detention center. They were mostly prostitutes, addicted, homeless girls. They were not even, you know, allowed to transfer us to that detention center, but they wanted to put pressure on us. Usually they won't transfer political prisoners to that detention center. But, you know, physically we were under so much pressure in that place for the first few days. I remember we would just pray and ask God for our release because we didn't want to be in that place.
Right.
But after a few days, we could see God's miracles and how he was using us to send his message to other women in that detention who really needed to hear the message of salvation. And we became encouraged, and we realized that he had a purpose for sending us to that dark place. We had the opportunity of talking to them about Jesus and praying for them, listening to their very sad stories. Most of those women were victims of the Iranian government and Islamic rule. That's why we believe that we had great opportunities. For the first 14 days, we could talk to about 70 to 80 women in that detention and share the message of love and forgiveness with them.
How long were you? You were in 14 days in the detention center. How long were you in Evin's prison?
In total, we were in prison for 259 days.
259 days, okay. And what was it like in the prison?
Evin Prison is famous for arresting, raping, torturing, and executing of many innocent people. It's a notorious prison, in one of the notorious prison in the world. And we saw many injustices in that prison. As Mariam shared about detention, the condition in Evin Prison also was awful. It was different, but it was horrible. Because we were, for the first few months, we were in a public ward, and we were with other prisoners, like murderers, killers, fraudulent, and other prisoners. All political prisoners were together, and there wasn't any separate, sections for prisoners. And the condition of food was awful. We couldn't eat for 9 months, and it was very difficult to eat the food in prison.
Wow.
And we didn't have access to medical, especially because of our faith. I remember the first question when we were sick and we were transferred to a small clinic in prison, which was very dirty. And the first question the doctors would ask was that, what is your charge? And as soon as they would hear that we were Christians, they would refuse to give us medication. Mariam and I, compared to other prisoners, we were in another prison, inside prison, because of our faith. There was another facility in prison which called cultural center. There were some classes there that prisoners could attend in those classes, very small library with only Islamic books. But as soon as they heard that we were Christians, I remember the first day that I entered that facility, the manager asked me, what is your charge? What is why you are here? And I told her that my charge is, I'm here because of my faith. I arrested because of my Christian faith. And as soon as she heard that, she told me, you should get out of here. You're dirty. You have to be executed immediately. Who let you in this facility? You are brainwashing our young people, and I don't allow you to attend in this facility.
Wow.
And again, most of the time we were locked in our cells in a public ward, and we couldn't attend we couldn't use any other facilities in prison. There were only three, three bathroom, and for more than hundreds of prisoners. And but there were also some prisoners who were prejudiced Muslims. For months, they called us dirty Christians because of our faith. But we try to show who Jesus is, what his teachings are by our behavior. Mm-hmm. We try to respect them. You know, they were insulting us, but we try to respect them, love them, pray for them. And after a while, because of, you know, our prayers, they could see miracles through our prayers. I had dreams about some of the prisoners, and they could see, you know, the miracles that Jesus was doing among prisoners. And as a result of that, you know, some of the prisoners came to us and they apologized because of their behavior. And also some guards came to us at the end and they apologized because of their behavior.
Wow.
But the horrible experience, you know, that we had in Evin prison was execution of other prisoners. We both experienced when we were in prison, they executed some of the prisoners, which was horrible. We never experienced such a thing. And they also executed our best friend, Shirin Alamhuli. She was a Kurdish girl. She was 28 years old, and she was a political prisoner. And they executed her after a few months that we got released. That was the horrible experience that we had about Evin prison. Wow. And as Mariam shared, there is another building in Evin prison, which called 209, and they transferred us in that building for 40 days. And there are many solitary cells in that building, and they kept prisoners, and they keep interrogating them. And for 2 days, we were separated, and we had long hours of interrogation by two interrogators. And most of the time, they would put pressure on us to deny our faith in Jesus. They threatened our life. They threatened the lives of our family members. And they told us that if you want to keep your faith, if you do not deny your faith in Jesus, you would face execution by hanging. Mm. And it was like mental torture for us. Every day we would hear the voice of other prisoners who were beating and torturing in other cells. And we were under so much pressure in that prison.
Hold it there, please. Mariam Rosman-Poor and Marzia Amirazadeh are my guests. They, in 2009, were caught, arrested, and sentenced to death for sharing the gospel with their fellow countrymen in Iran. We'll be right back.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 15 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile. Everyday living. Effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
Would you get on a plane that doesn't have a pilot? Investing in passive index mutual funds may present the same issue. The Ave Maria mutual funds are actively managed by seasoned investment professionals to help you meet your investment goals in a morally responsible way. Ave Maria funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors could invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. You can learn more about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
If you believe in the power of prayer, Ave Maria Radio invites you to look at their website to submit a prayer request at AveMariaRadio.net. Your prayer requests are shared with hundreds at the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, the Servants of God's Love, the Monastery of the Blessed Sacrament Cloistered Nuns, the Family of Faith Apostolate, and the staff of Ave Maria Radio. Just go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the Community tab to submit your prayer request today.
What is the great mystery of the Christian faith? It is, of course, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Even though the resurrection is an historical fact professed by the apostles and signified by the empty tomb, no one knows the exact hour Jesus emerged from the tomb. There were no eyewitnesses to describe the actual moment, only the result, the live appearances of Jesus to his disciples. It is an event that transcends and surpasses history, the Catholic Catechism tells us. The three persons of the Trinity, using their individual characteristics, acted as one in bringing about the resurrection. God the Father raised up the Son. God the Holy Spirit gave life to Jesus' dead humanity and called it to the glorious state of lordship. The Son effects his own resurrection by virtue of his divine power. He predicted the Passion and declared that he had the power to lay down his life and take it up again. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popcha.
How can parents raise faithful kids in a faithless world? A 50-year study of over 3,500 people found that the degree of parental warmth kids experience in religious households was the single biggest factor in determining whether children would become faithful adults. As I summarize in my book, Discovering God Together, The Catholic Guide to Raising Faithful Kids, children are most likely to become faithful adults when they've experienced the faith as the source of the warmth in their homes. The same study found that rates of faith retention in kids skyrocketed when religious dads took point on practices that contributed to a warm, faithful household. Things like generous affection, maintaining strong family rituals, and gentle approaches to discipline. God created parents to give kids a physical sign of his love. The more warmth our kids experience in our presence, the more warmly they'll feel toward the God who loves them through us. I'm Dr. Greg Popcheck, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. Marzia Amirzadeh and Maryam Rustenpour are the authors of Captive in Iran. It's their testimony story of being, in 2009, caught, arrested, sentenced to death. We're talking about their prison experience right now. You know, Jesus promises that the Holy Spirit will give you words to say when you're thrown in prison for your faith. Did you have a special sense of anointing? Did you feel that the Holy Spirit was with you, with your words there in prison?
You know, yes. For most of the time that we were in prison, we always tell people that without the presence of Holy Spirit, we couldn't stand even one day in prison. From the first day, I can say we could experience Holy Spirit and God's presence with us. That was really encouraging for us. I remember the first day we were arrested, we were so scared. And, you know, we are human beings and we have our weaknesses. And this was the first time we had such experience, you know, people coming to our apartment and experiencing all those harsh behaviors from our interrogators, from the guards who took us to that detention center. And I remember the first day when they transferred us to that dark basement, and they threatened us to physical torture. We didn't even know how to pray in Farsi, because when you're scared and when you're in shock, you don't even know how to pray and how to ask God to help you. And I remember we just started praying in tongues and asked the Holy Spirit to give us the strength we needed to stand those difficult moments. And I remember after half an hour praying and singing, we could see the power of Holy Spirit, and we could see that God was strengthening us and giving us power. And this happened for 9 months, you know, for every day we needed the presence of God. Every day we needed the power of Holy Spirit to strengthen us, to, you know, to just to be able to stand those difficult moments during the interrogations. Just everyday life in prison was horrible, and without God's presence, we couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And I remember one day when we were in 209 section, you know, we were separated. They put me in another cell with another political prisoner, and Marzia with other political prisoners. And I remember one day, you know, in my cell, it was a solitary confinement. I was with another political prisoner, I felt that I couldn't breathe and I couldn't feel the presence of God. It was just for one day in that cell, I couldn't feel the presence of God. And I can say that was the scariest experience I had in prison. I couldn't hear his voice. I couldn't feel his presence. And I remember I just lay down on the ground and I said, you know, this is so hard, just not hearing your voice and not feeling your presence. And I remember I just felt that I needed to start singing in tongues and asking Holy Spirit to help me. And I remember I just sang songs, and I started worshiping God in tongues, and for like 15 to 30 minutes. And suddenly I felt strong presence of God all over me. And it was so amazing. I cannot even describe it by words how amazing was the presence of God. And something that God taught me that day was that, you know, even those moments that we don't feel the presence of God for whatever reason, He is with us.
Yes.
And He is surrounding us by His presence and by His power.
I remember, I think we interviewed somebody way back when this happened. And I know that there were appeals for people to pray for you and to write. Were you able to get any mail while you were in prison?
No, unfortunately not. We, when we were in prison, we heard from our prison authorities that we were receiving about 50 letters every day. But unfortunately, they didn't give us even one of those letters to read. They told us that we are not going to give you those letters to encourage you in your faith. But it was very powerful, you know, when we heard that. It was so encouraging. As a result of, you know, such support, at least I can say they stopped, you know, torture us physically. They didn't torture us physically because they knew that the world are watching them and people are aware of our case, and many people were advocating us. Many Christian organizations have started advocating for us. But we are very glad that even though they didn't give us those letters to read, we heard that they forced some guards to open those letters to see, to check what people had written to us. And it was very interesting that many people has written the verses of Bible. And by reading those verses, some of them became encouraged to know about Christianity. They became curious, and they came to us and they asked us, for instance, one of them asked us, what does it mean Jesus is shepherd? And we were surprised at how they know that. And they told us, and we realized, even though we couldn't read those letters, but God used those letters to send His message to the guards, to the judges and other people in prison.
Beautiful. Why did they release you? What was there outside pressure put on them?
The first reason that we are free today, we are alive today, we give all the glory to God because it was His power, because of His grace that we are free and alive today. He was the one that gave us the victory. But the second reason, we believe that because of the Christian support, because as I mentioned, many Christians were advocating for us and, you know, bringing awareness about our case. And the Iranian government also was under so much pressure, international pressure from, you know, the United Nations, Amnesty International, some people from the State Department in the United States, and also Pope from Vatican sent a letter to the government and asked for our release. And because of all these pressures, because of the politics, they had to release us.
Wow.
Unlike their desire, because of the politics, they wanted to show that there is, you know, we are not going to kill people because of their faith, which is
right.
a lie. And if it wasn't because of this support, we were definitely were executed.
Yeah,
and I can say they had to release us.
Well, I'm obviously delighted they did. And what are you doing now?
So we moved to the United States in 2011 because we couldn't stay in Iran.
Mm-hmm.
Before they released us, they threatened us and they told us that we couldn't live in Iran as Christians anymore. And we were also threatened in our last court. That's why we decided to leave Iran because we knew that we couldn't live there as Christian or have any Christian activities. That's why we left in 2010, and then we moved to the U.S. Through UN in 2011. And since we moved here, we started to share these stories. We started to share what the Lord has done in our life, especially during the 9 months we were in prison. And also we decided to share some of the stories we experienced, some of those injustices we experienced in prison with the world, because we felt that we were responsible. You know, we knew that God sent us to that dark place for
right.
a reason.
Right.
So we started to share this wherever we were in churches, conferences, universities in the U.S. and also in other countries. We try to bring awareness by sharing our story and the stories of other people who experience the same injustices. It's because it's not just religious minorities who are under persecution in Iran. Iran today is like a big jail for millions of Iranians who are experiencing persecution in different ways by this cruel government. That's why we decided to bring awareness. We published our book in 2013, Captive in Iran, just to share part of the injustices we experienced. And then we started talking about these experiences. At the same time, we decided to continue our education. Just in December, we graduated with Master of International Affairs.
Okay.
And we try to be advocate for religious minorities and also for those who are experiencing human rights violations in Iran.
Okay, beautiful. Will you be doing any more writing?
We hope that we can write more about injustices that are going on in Iran, especially to women, because women in Iran are the group who are under so much pressure because of the Islamic rules. And that's why we hope that one day we can share more stories we experienced in prison. And also, it's not just, stories of women during those 9 months. Every day we hear about the injustices that are going on in Iran. And we hope we can be more help to women and, in general, to people in Iran, but mostly to women in Iran.
Wow. Well, I want to thank you for being with me today and sharing that story, Maryam and Marzia. I wish you continued success as you can work out your own salvation in fear and trembling. And I hope we hear more from you in the future. Thank you.
Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you for having us.
The book is called Captive in Iran, Maryam Rustampour and Marzia Amirzadeh. It's available. We'll have it, of course, in the online bookstore. It's a remarkable, true story of hope. It's a story of spiritual triumph, and it takes place in some of the darkest areas on Earth. And Iran's Evin prison is one of those very dark places. This is what's terrible. Iran is actually a signatory to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, also to the International Covenant on Human Rights, and both those documents affirm that religious freedom is a key component of human rights. In fact, Iran's constitution verifies that Christians are a protected religious minority. But it's one thing to have it on paper. It's another thing to have it in practice. And you just heard from two women who were imprisoned for 8-9 months because they were distributing Bibles. Roughly a year ago, International Christian Concern requested that the United States Treasury Department issue what are called global Magnitsky sanctions against Iran's Evin prison because of its human rights abuse record. And we'll have available in the Crested Guest Archives, in fact, a case file summary of the documentary evidence that International Christian Concern submitted to the U.S. Treasury Department. So that'll be available for you again in the Crested Guest Archives. Now, I know most of us don't ever expect like this would happen in the United States, and I don't think we'll see that here in the U.S. But what I do know is that Christendom is over. And we've entered a new apostolic era. In other words, all the social and moral capital that had built up over centuries and centuries of Christian influence, that has been largely squandered. And we're going to be forced to remake our case about the lordship of Christ. We are almost starting from scratch. That's why I call it a new apostolic era. And think about it this way. There's going to be great pressure on us as we live out our faith and when we try to share our faith, because we're going to be accused of myth-making in an age of science. We're going to be accused of sexual repression in this age of erotic emancipation. We're going to be accused of holding to rigid hierarchies in this egalitarian society. We're going to be accused of having monarchical tendencies in this democratic age, we're going to be accused of talking about corporate personality in an age of stark individualism. So we are a spiritual and cognitive minority. We see the world very differently than those who are the movers and shakers in all of the major sectors of American modern life.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
Are you passionate about Jesus? Are you zealous for Jesus? Are you fervent for Jesus? Are we fervent for the gospel? Are we passionate about helping this world come to know him? Is that true? It's not true for most people in the church. Is Jesus my best friend? Is he your best friend? I'm looking around the church. There's a set of guys in here who have great man caves. As I was praying this morning, I felt like the Lord said, hey, when are you going to come to my man cave? Like, you guys think a flat screen TV is really cool. Well, you should see what I got to offer. Because I and I alone, he says, can really give you what it is you're longing for. Whoever it is we're rooting for right now, they're going to lose eventually. Or whatever it is that's occupying our time, one day we're going to realize it really wasn't that important. Why aren't we hanging out with the one who alone can show us what life is really all about? When's the last time you hung out in the Lord's man cave?
Dr. Ray Guarendi.
What is criticism exactly? If you pay close attention, do you notice what most criticism is? Oh, it's not because you're doing something wrong or hurtful, something that needs corrected. Most criticism is, you're not doing it the way I would do it. Or you're not doing it the way I want you to do it. That's what most criticism is. And you have to get good at sorting that out. Otherwise, you're going to get real upset when anyone says anything about what you are doing. Now, of course, you could turn this on yourself. Do you do that? Is most of your criticism a message to someone else that says, you're not doing it the way I would do it? Well, save your criticism for things that are really wrong.
Thank you so much. It was good being with you. And let me remind you that the books we discussed, Captive in Iran, and also A Catholic Scientist Proves God Exists, available in the online bookstore. Just go to avemariaradio.net. Again, if you're living in Southeast Michigan, this Sunday, there's going to be a Jericho March outside of Planned Parenthood. More information for, this is in Ann Arbor, more information is available at avemariaradio.net. Again, 40 Days for Life is kicking off its event, kicking off its series of 40 days with this event on Sunday. They formally, of course, begin on Ash Wednesday. Thank you for being with me today. I'm going to be on retreat on Monday. Jerry Usher is going to be sitting in for me, and I thank him so much for that. Jerry is a longtime friend. So thank you for being with me today. Have a great weekend. Remember, Sunday, a little Easter, it's where we corporately get together and witness to the resurrection.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMaria Radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at avemariaradio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at avemariaradio.net.